What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 102 of the Lukewarm Games Podcast, your source for unique perspectives on all things video games and pop culture. As always, I'm your host, Luke Lewis, and I'm once again joined by the music maestra of Animal Crossing, Claire Hellenberger.
Hey, Luke, how's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
I'm doing good.
We're here to talk about something that's near and dear to both of our hearts, yes. Music, hence music maestra.
Yes, very, very
an homage topical. To your passion for Animal Crossing and your day job as a music teacher.
Yeah, the real intersection of my interests.
Love it. It's all coming together. Speaking of everyone coming together, we have some fantastic guests with us tonight. This has been a long time in the making, and I'm super excited to welcome to the show special guest Matt Storm, a.k.a. Stormageddon, host of Reignite Games Are Fun podcast, or Games Fun and Games podcast. I'm so sorry. Screen Snark, CPOV Autographs, and many others. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Thank you. It's my fault for having titles hard to pronounce. Like, that's totally
on me. No, I'm so sorry. I totally flubbed that run. I had it written down correctly. I was looking at it, and then I psyched myself out. But super excited to have you on. I've been following your podcast for a long time, and it's great to have you.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. I'm a big fan of the show. I've been listening for a little while, and yeah, I'm glad to be here.
Thank you so much. And rounding out our quartet, we have Travis Kolnut, co-host of Cutscenes, a video game movie podcast. Welcome to the show, Travis.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
It has also been a long time in the making to have
Very
you on
long.
The show.
Yeah.
We have now rounded out our, we call it the Cutscenes passport. We have had every Cutscenes co-host on the show now, and we're super happy to have you here as well. But this group was, in my mind, the Avengers of indie podcasters to talk about video game music. So I'm very excited
wow.
to get us all together.
Oh my gosh, which Avengers does that make me? Probably Hawkeye, because I have literally no powers in terms of music in this case, but I'll take it.
Hawkeye's pretty cool.
Hawkeye is pretty cool. I guess that makes me Iron Man because I'm pompous and an asshole. I don't know. I guess we can go with that. I'm not
it.
A drunk, though. So,
Claire, what Avenger do you identify with in this moment?
I don't know. Hulk, honestly.
Hulk? I love that.
Justification for that, but it's just the first thing that came to mind.
That works. Guess that makes you our Captain America, huh, Luke?
I think so.
Okay, I'll take it. Saves the day. Good vibes. All right. Well, we have so much to cover on this show that I think we just need to jump right into our first segment and just get right into it. Our first segment, We've Got the News, our weekly news segment where we break down what's happening in the video games industry. Today, we're discussing the recent Video Game Awards nominations and kind of our overall thoughts on the nominations, what games we want to give a shout out to that maybe weren't highlighted in the way we hoped, and then also make some predictions specifically within the best music category within our music focus today. So I'll kick things off with Matt. What were your overall thoughts of these nominees this year? What were the big omissions for you? What were you excited to see represented?
Not to be Debbie Downer, but I really thought it was
okay.
A lot of bunk. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm playing God of War Ragnarok. It's great. I played Elden Ring. I loved it, you know. But, like, that and Horizon are in, like, almost every category. And, like, they're all, I haven't played Horizon, but they're all good games. But, like, there are other good games. Like, the fact that the indie representation in Game of the Year is Stray, which was a perfectly fine game that I actually enjoyed, but not Tunic or Citizen Sleeper or, like, literally Neon White, literally all of these other indie games that got high praise
for sure.
And were on every major publication, like, drives me a little crazy. But, I mean, ultimately, it is cool to see, like, Xenoblade Chronicles 3, which I didn't think would be nominated for Game of the Year, and that's kind of, like, a nice nod, even though I'm not a huge fan of the Xenoblade stuff. I don't know. It feels like the Grammys of video games these days. Like, I write the Grammys off because they don't include a lot of indie musicians, and, like, it feels very mainstream. And don't get me wrong, like, Carly Rae Jepsen's one of my favorite artists of all times. Like, I like my fair
for
share
sure.
of mainstream stuff, but, like, I don't know. I'm just tired of seeing the same three games win every year. And, like, I don't know. Part of me wants Stray to win Game of the Year because it's the smallest one. But also, I think it's the one that deserves it the least. So, I don't know. And it's not because it's a bad game. I just don't think it's the best game that's in that category. I mean, I'm grateful, like, the best indie category does have Tunic in it, which I think should be winning as many awards as it can. You know, Neon White, Cult of the Lamb, so on and so forth. You know, And like even Best Debut has Vampire Survivors, which I thought would be on a lot more lists because it was literally a meme for a while and like everywhere. You know, what else was there? And then there were some surprises like Best Action Game has Ninja Turtles, which like I loved the new Ninja Turtles game. And so I'm glad that's getting some attention. But yeah, overall, I'm a little sour on it just because I feel like the games, some of the games represented were odd choices. And I know it's all done by like the major publications all vote on what their favorite nominees are and then they tally it up. And there are people I know at several publications who were also as outraged about the indie games not being really represented,
sure.
Which means they obviously have probably put them forward. But I don't know. For me, I'm just like, meh, this kind of stinks. But I'll still watch it and cheer on the games that I do care about because I'm predictable, if nothing else.
For sure. I think that's totally reasonable. I think my first reaction when I saw the list was, I'm excited about the games that I enjoyed being represented, but to your point, the indie representation just didn't feel as intentional to me, and I'm not sure if that was just that some of the larger outlets didn't get a chance to play some of these smaller titles, or, you know, they were really focused on these bigger AAA titles in terms of guides or review coverage, and then as soon as they came out, it was on to the next one. But, yeah, I was a little bummed. I like the best indie title category quite a bit. I think every game represented there really spoke to me this year. But the couple you mentioned specifically, Tunic, Neon White, Sifu was a really big one for me this year that is represented in a few categories. But for me, those are like top tier game of the year contenders.
Sifu is nominated for best fighting game, though, which is like...
That's insane. I don't understand how that happened. I've beaten Sifu, and it's not a fighting game. It's not... Yeah, that feels like if you ever watch the Golden Globes when they do the best comedy musical.
Yeah, what is that category every single time?
The Martian one that year, and it's like, I mean, there's funny moments in that movie, but it's
not
it's
a comedy or
it's
a
musical. Definitely a drama, or like, you know, there's
or,
a lot.
Or when Get Out was in that category.
Oh, God, I forgot about that. Yeah. That almost feels like a Saturday Night Live bit like that. Yeah. But that was a real thing.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. Well, Travis, what did you make of all of this?
So unfortunately, I haven't played a lot. I've barely played any games this year. I've had a really busy year. I think the only game that came out this year.
You are with child?
I am with child. So not physically, but I.
Yeah. I think it's reasonable that
you are with a child.
Yeah.
You live with a child.
Yeah. So the only game I've actually played that came out this year was Triangle Strategy, which I'm happy to see. Got nominated for something. Yeah. Which was great. But I did, like, when I went through the list, I kind of echo the same thing as everyone said here. It's the same titles across multiple categories. And I would have liked to see a little bit of variety, but I mean, us at Cutscenes over here, we love our video game awards and we like watching all that stuff. And
for sure.
Just, you know, it's just a fun celebration of games. And I'm hoping that, like, at least the awards themselves kind of highlight a variety of games and it's not just going to be the same game being talked about every single time, you know, so hopefully we'll see how the show goes, but in terms of the nominations, it is very samey.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. It feels like what really is defining each category, if it's the same four games, maybe a new like ringer thrown in every other category, but
it's one of those odd years where like Elden Ring is truly a very special game and it's like hard to argue against it in a lot of these categories, but to that representation piece, like, I just want, like, each of these games to get some sort of highlight. And they are nominated, so there is that honor there. But, I think I would just like to see a more even playing field, so to speak.
It's almost like if Game of the Year is, like, the best of everything, then maybe the ones nominated for Game of the Year shouldn't be in the other subcategories, right? Because this one is, like, nominating everything. Like, I know that's not how, really, awards ceremonies typically work.
That's a fair point, though.
But, like, it is, you know, like, if it's going to be the best, if it is going to blow everything out of the water, then, like, well, we might as well just, like, wrap it all up and give it all to Elden Ring and just call it a day, you know? But, like...
I mean, there's also the irony in which Best Narrative has... Elden Ring is in it. And like, Elden Ring, I loved for a lot of reasons. And you're talking to someone who swore off Souls games for ages. Like, I was like, they're too hard. I'm no good. And then I played Dark Souls 3 and fell in love with it with the help of mods. It's not illegal. And then And then I played Elden Ring, but I played that naturally because it was brand new. There were no mods for it that really worked. And so I loved it. It was a struggle to get through it, but I loved it. But, like, best narrative? Like, the narrative moments are great that happen, but it is... I just don't think it's the best story in games this year. Like, God of War Ragnarok makes sense, even though I haven't finished it, and Horizon as well, because the first games were both incredibly written. So I'm assuming the sequels are as well. But, like, I don't know why Elden Ring... And Plague Tale, fine. I'm sure it's great, but I just feel like... Tunic is one of the best narratives without barely having a narrative. It's the way the narrative is told that I think makes that a really great narrative. Or even Neon White, which takes what looks like it could be even a dating sim, but it's not. It's this incredible card game, action platformer, whatever. Like, I don't know. It seems like the top three biggest games of the year are in every category because that's the only games people played this year, which is fine. It's fair, but it seems odd.
I was excited to see Immortality nominated in the narrative category because just what a wild game, different experience, like doing something really unique. And so that was cool. But yeah, I definitely agree. It just, if you're highlighting the same couple games, what about the rest?
Yeah.
And I like the point you made, Matt, too, about Tunic specifically, because it makes me think of last year, how much I enjoyed Unpacking and the way that narrative is presented to you is so organic and so natural and so unique. And that actually got a fair bit of recognition. I don't believe at the Game Awards, but I think they won a BAFTA for the narrative and they won a couple different things. So, like, I love seeing developers who are really trying something different getting their laurels. Let's take a look specifically at the best music category, tying it back to this music discussion. So for listeners, the nominees are Plague Tale Requiem, Elden Ring, God of War Ragnarok, and Metal Hellsinger. So kind of those same three plus Metal Hellsinger. What do we make of this, and what are some other games this year that we want to give a shout out to?
It just seems like I only finished God of War, the original, like, reboot of God of War very recently. And the music is good, but, like, best? Like, it's interesting. And, like, even more so, Elden Ring, like, I liked the music in Elden Ring. The title screen music, epic, like, really impressive. But I don't, like, it reminds me of Breath of the Wild. Like, when, I think Breath of the Wild also is in the best score category its year. I might be making that up, but, like, But Breath of the Wild is the worst Zelda game when it comes to Zelda music, I feel, because it's not as impactful as, like, the classic stuff. And I know that it was meant to be more atmospheric, but that's what I get from Elden Ring. Like, I don't think music when I think of Elden Ring. I think of so many other things. Metal Hellsinger should be here, absolutely. The concept, all of that makes total sense, but, like, I don't know. It's just odd. Like, Tunic score is incredible, and it's
Tunic
not by Lifeform.
Is so good,
and it's not here. It's
legitimately very good.
Like, Cult of the Lamb has a great soundtrack. Like, a bunch of the indies do, but even there are other AAA. I mean, it came out maybe too late to qualify, but while Sonic Frontiers has a ton of issues, although I happen to have loved it, the score is incredible. The music is incredible in that game, and so, like, you know, Shovel Knight did came out this year, not even here. Like, there's so many games by incredible composers or, you know, interesting musical themes that these all feel like I couldn't tell you the difference in style of music between Plague Tale and Elden Ring. I'm sure they're different, but, like, and then God of War is a tone that's very specific that I'm not discounting its value. I think it is an impressive game with impressive music. I just don't think it's the best score from this year or best music from this year.
Totally fair. How about for you, Claire?
I definitely think that, at least from what I've heard, and I haven't played these games, but I've heard their music a fair bit, when you're playing or just, like, listening for fun. I think that the best music from this year isn't in this category.
Yeah.
Like, Cult of the Lamb, specifically, and Stray were both scores, so that just, like, really caught my attention, and I'm surprised they didn't even get nominated.
Yeah.
Let alone not get nominated over these scores that are more, especially Elden Ring, like, it is more ambient. There's a lot of time when there's not really music or it's so background you don't notice it.
Yeah.
So.
It's also weird that, like, OFK didn't get, We Are OFK, the pop album game.
I just played that recently and I really enjoyed it. And specifically, the music was great.
It's all about the music, and like, to not even get a nod in this category, it just seems so odd to me.
Yeah, seems when like you're such an obvious choice. Specifically, leaving out like a music like a game built around music. It's interesting that you're going for something that's very atmospheric, like Elden Ring, like you guys are saying. Like, it's just, I don't know, weird choices.
Yeah. Well, and I don't, it's one of those things where I don't think, like, just because Metal Hellsinger is a music game or just because We Are OK is a music game shouldn't automatically qualify for this category. But when they're as good as they are, objectively speaking, and they're really separating themselves out within that space, I think it deserves the nod. For sure.
Yeah.
Alrighty. I think we're ready to jump into our title track discussion. We are breaking down our top five most influential video game scores or soundtracks. So we've all assembled a list of games we want to highlight. We'll probably have some honorable mentions to shout out as well. And we're just going to unpack like why these scores and soundtracks resonated with us, why they were so important to us, and how they kind of influenced our opinions of these games and created some special memorable connections. So I think we'll kind of just go around the horn. We'll start with each other's number five and we'll work our way down our list to our number one picks. And if you have any honorable mentions you want to throw out along the way, feel free and we'll get right into things. Travis, do you want to kick us off with your first pick?
Yeah. My number five is Journey. It's Austin Winery. It's
good pick.
It's so good. It's a game that is, well, kind of like we were just talking about, it's built around the music. Like, the music is telling the story in that game.
Yeah.
And the way it builds progressively as you keep going through, and this game is so short, and, like, you could just listen to this whole thing in 2 hours if you wanted to, but, like, it is, the way it ends, what is it, Apotheosis is the final, like that final track. It just, it builds and it builds and it builds and it's just so good. And I get goosebumps every time I hear that, like that starting little kind of tune that happens right when you're starting that level. Like I can, a lot of these tracks that we're going to probably talk about, it's a lot of connecting memories, right? Like you're connecting memories to the emotion that you're feeling when you played that game. And a lot of that is music, especially for me when I'm playing a game, is giving me that emotional push. And this game, like, I don't know. Journey is just like really, 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 really good. And it's my number five. It honestly, it could be higher, but it's hard for me to pick. It's so hard to pick all these games.
With any of my picks or honorable mentions, it could change on the day. This is what I wrote down and finalized this morning, but you know, tomorrow I'll wake up and feel differently. But yeah, Journey is incredible.
Yeah.
I think, to your point, the music creates those like memorable moments throughout that experience, and it works so well with the sound design and the like arguably pretty simplistic gameplay loop, but like that whole experience is just it's very, very good.
Yeah, the music is telling you the emotions in that, like it's giving you the emotions. You know when this is supposed to be more sad, you know when this is supposed to be more dangerous, and there's no like voiceover. It's just it's just music, and it's just giving you what you're supposed to be feeling at those moments, and it just does such a good job of it, and I loved it.
Journey is one of those games. Like, so I didn't play it when it came out because I didn't have a PS3, but in the late years of my PS4 before I retired it, I think it was either during Extra Life or just during the time when I was streaming. It might just have been when I was streaming more. I had never played it, and on a Saturday, I think it was, I was like, you know what? It's only like 2 hours long. I'm just going to do an entire session and stream this game. And like,
oh, cool.
God, and I, from start to finish, I streamed the whole thing, and God bless my audience. Like, they went along for the ride with me, and like, I weeped at the end. Like,
oh, yeah.
It just, like, and it was just such a special moment. Like, I weeped with a group of people who all wanted to see that. Like, they wanted to be a part of that because they all also weeped when they played it. And like, they, you know, I like being a part of my community in that way, like sharing those kinds of experiences, because I'm an emotional music listener. I often cry and laugh and whatever at music. Like, I just, like, that's how I kind of process it. And that game, like, this game blew me away, not just with just how it played and when you make a friend and all of that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And then that ending, it's just, it's a perfect game. And the music is 110% a big part of why it's such a magical experience.
Definitely. I think that game above all is a prime example of like, go into it knowing absolutely nothing.
Yes.
And
correct.
I had no expectations. I was just like, people are very excited about this game, I'm going to try it. And I had similar experience to you, Matt, of sat down on a Saturday and was just like, I'm just going to play it all the way through, and just like in tears by the end. And I didn't know I could feel this playing a video game kind of transcendent experience. Claire, I don't think you played Journey.
No, I have not.
Yes. I think you would really like Journey.
No, I know. We've talked about it before. It's on the list. It's just every year there's new things added to the list. So.
For sure. No, I 100% understand that one. Do you want to take the next pick and talk about your number five?
Sure. So my number five is probably the only game that we will talk about tonight that hasn't actually
it's
been...
It's all over after this.
No, I haven't played it. Like, I'll just come out and say it. I haven't played Undertale. but it's Undertale. I've listened through the soundtrack.
Set the stage.
So many times, just like for pleasure, listening pleasure, which I do. I really like listening to video game and movie music, like totally separate from actually watching the movie, playing the video game. I've listened to tons of soundtracks I've never actually seen the content for, but this is one of them. But I do think it is some of the best video game music ever written. I'm not going to say too much about it because I know it's on some other lists and y'all have actually played the game. So you can maybe speak to more how like it fits in with the game itself. But just in terms of like the variety of styles at play and the like complexity of the harmonies. And it's really cool. So that's my number five.
I think you have a cool perspective with this game as well, because as a teacher, your students are very into the music of Undertale.
Yeah.
And you have students come into your classroom and play the music on your piano in your classroom, and you connect with them through that and their love of video games and their love of music. And I just think that's really cool. And we were chatting about it before the show, but it gives me hope for the future generations. Yeah. And that makes me sound old, but like it does. And it's just good vibes. And I feel like that's a thing that video game music can do. It can transcend, you know, and I think it can really illustrate to maybe folks who don't understand what video games truly are, or to young children and things, like it can just be so impactful.
There's also a fair bit of my students who also had not played the game, but like everyone's playing the song and it's the hot song to learn. And I have at least five students I can think of who played Undertale because the music is so popular to play in the band room. So
that's
awesome. Pretty cool too.
I'm
Do
so
you feel
jealous
motivated
of you?
I know we were just talking about the backlog with Journey, but like, has the love of the music and your students' inspiration motivated you to check out the game at some point?
Oh yeah, definitely. Okay. It's just,
right on.
It's on the list.
Yeah.
It's on Switch, right?
It's on everything.
Yeah.
It's on Switch.
Yeah,
it's on Steam.
Okay.
It's on PlayStation,
I played mine
Xbox,
on Switch, which was nice. Yeah.
Nice.
It runs beautifully on the Switch, and I've played it multiple times there. If you're gonna pick up and play it, I think JRPGs and RPGs of any kind are best on Switch. That's just my preference, anyway. So
love it.
Definitely a great way to play it.
So kicking it back over to you, Matt. I'm the only one who doesn't have Undertale on their list tonight, so I'd love to hear your thoughts as well.
Yeah, it's my number four. And I should be clear, my number one and my number two are in order. And then three, four, and five could be in any order. So this could have very well been my fifth. But it's Toby Fox, someone who I had not really heard of until this game came out. And I didn't play it till it came to Switch. I knew of its existence, and then it finally came to Switch, I believe, in 2019. But it had been out since, like, 2016. Or 2015, actually. And so... it was always on my list. It was like, oh, this is an RPG, but it's really different. It's unique. And like, I mean, Toby Fox is a creator I have so much more respect for now, having played Deltarune Chapter 1 and 2, and just the interesting way he engages with RPGs, being a fan of RPGs and turning expectations on their head. Like, that's the whole point of Undertale, without spoiling too much, is like that you are supposed to do the unexpected. You can do the expected as well, but and you get varying results. But like, the music does that too. Like, the first time you meet the Dog Knight, and like there's barking in the music, like digitized barking in the music, or like, you know, the what are they, Mems, the cat people who talk all funny, but like Undertale as a game is some of my favorite music, because it's similar to some of my favorite movies. Like, I've gone on many a podcast saying Scott Pilgrim versus the World is one of my favorite movies, because the music and that soundtrack reminds me of the scenes when I hear the songs, and yes, very much Undertale feels that way. Like the music reminds me of those moments in the game, whether it's Heartbreak or not, like the Flowey fight, all of that stuff. Like all of those songs have such an impact on me, which is why I'm so curious, Claire, if you do get to play it at some point, how that'll impact you. Because I have listened to soundtracks for movies I haven't seen, but I do that a lot less these days. I used to do it a lot more when I was like in high school. Because, like, you know, there'd be a new soundtrack with, like, a ton of new metal bands that I love on it for some action movie that I don't care about. And so I'd buy it just to get the songs. Back when we had to buy CDs to listen to music, for because sure, there was no way, other way to hear it. I'm very old. But so I'm curious with Undertale how that's going to feel, because I know how that feels with movies. But I don't know that there's a game. I mean, I guess Persona 5 Royal a little bit. I'm playing now, and I'd known a lot of the music before I played it. Mm. But typically that's not. It's usually the other way around for me, so I am very curious, sure, about your experience.
I'll report back.
Yeah, we'll have that would be a fun, like, retrospective, yeah, podcast look to, yeah, get, yeah, your take.
I've had a fair bit of games where I've heard the music first, uh-huh, and there's a couple. Yeah, there's several games I haven't ever played at all. But usually Luke plays the game first. Whenever it comes out, he plays it first, and I hear the music from the other room. And I will. There's a game on my list I'll talk about later where the music is a big part of why I picked up the game in the first place. So
that's awesome.
Nice.
Yeah. Kind of like to build on that, like on it, it's kind of an honorable mention for me, but like the way the Super Smash Bros. Franchise uses, like, it celebrates the music so much,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm, especially in Ultimate.
Ultimate. That's the thing, and the fact that you can use your Switch as like a portable like music player if you wanted to for that thing.
I love it.
I love that, but it's such a celebration of music. But I have heard so many songs that I've never heard before, mm, through that game, and then gone on to research that game and been like, oh, this is interesting. I liked the way this sounded. I liked the way that was. And I all those songs, like, I was like, do I add Smash Bros. To my list? It feels like cheating because you're, it's you're adding a bunch of stuff.
I thought about it too.
Fair, yeah.
But like, it's, there's so many games that are in there that you would hear such a variety of music from so many different places that you never would have picked up that game before had you not really heard it. And that was the case with me, at least for a lot of stuff, that, like, Nintendo things that I never really had any interest in before, like,
sure,
even like Fire Emblem. I like, don't get me wrong, I love like turn-based stuff, but like to hear those songs in those games, I was like, oh, I really like a lot of this. And then to pick up those games and then to hear them again in like their original form, because there's a lot of remixes and stuff in, mm, Smash 2. But
for sure,
kind of like on that same topic, just having a different perspective in on how you hear that music is very, very interesting, because it's not, you're not attaching that emotional connection in the same way. If like Undertale in this case is like, for me, there's a very strong emotional tie to all those songs as you're playing that game. So yes, to hear like Claire's perspective of like loving the music and not having the like those story beats in your head when you're doing it, it's super interesting. And I'd be very curious, like, kind of like we said, is I'd love to hear your thoughts once you actually play it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Amazing. Let's go. Am I next? I guess I'm next.
Yeah.
It can be you or me.
I think we both
have number
fives.
Yeah.
This is true. I'm always horrible when we do these list episodes, if we get about halfway through and I'm like, what number are we on now? I'll go next. So my number five is Uncharted 2 Among Thieves, by Greg Edmondson. This was a tough one. I had trouble with number five specifically. I got my four and then I was like, oh, what's the one more I want to represent? I love the Uncharted series. I grew up watching the Indiana Jones movies. I was Indiana Jones for Halloween. My dad and I discovered the Uncharted games when I got a PlayStation 3, and we just fell in love. And I picked two specifically because that was the one that I think really made me fall in love with the series. I enjoyed one, but two was more polished, the set pieces were more involved, and it really had that true like globe-trotting action movie feel for me. And I think the orchestral score just really lends itself well to that game. It sets the tone, whether it's running across rooftops, being shot at by an attack helicopter, or the more quiet moments in the game. I just think it's a really special one for me. Objectively, I think Uncharted 4's score is better, but yeah, this one resonates with me and kind of has that nostalgic tie specifically.
I love that franchise. I I had never played them again because I never had a PS3. And so when the collection came out of the first three games, I played them. I got through 1 and 2, and then I started 3 and fell off. And then when 4 came on to PlayStation Plus, I went, you know what? Let me finish 3 and finally play 4. 4 is my favorite until I played Lost Legacy, and I will say it here on the record, Lost Legacy is the best in the whole franchise.
But that's also I need to play it. I love the series so much, and
They just released the new collection that has the like HD remaster of it. I played the PS4 version. Okay. But like Chloe's my favorite character, and so like, and she's one of the front and center characters in that.
Sure.
But the second game, like, I can hear the main theme to Uncharted from the second game in my head.
I can hear the menu music right now as I'm thinking about it. Like,
It's iconic, and also like Nathan Drake. I mean, like, is become one of my favorite video game characters. I mean, yes, he's a snarky adventurer, sarcastic, like the MO that I tend to love in most things. But it's just, I think that series has done some incredible stuff. I think they need to let Nathan Drake rest and continue to make games following Lost Legacy and Chloe and all of those characters. But it's just an incredible series, and the scoring feels so cinematic, which is the point, right? It's meant to feel like an action adventure movie, and the scoring is absolutely a huge part of that.
For sure.
Definitely.
Awesome. Matt, do you want to chat about your number 5?
Sure. So my number 5 is a fairly recent game. I was very relieved to see that other people were putting games from like 2021 and 2020. Because a little background on me. I'm a big music nerd. I used to have a music podcast. I am obsessed with music. And I maybe changed my top 5 15 times over the last week we tried to schedule the pod. Because I just, old games, new games, couldn't decide what. One of the games was on this list until I saw we were talking about our favorite soundtrack of this year. And then I was like, oh, good, I can move that. But the game for my number 5 is Boyfriend Dungeon, which came out last year as of when we're recording. Because you could be listening to this 10 years from now. Who knows?
For sure.
And it's by Marsky and Madeline McQueen. It is a pop synth record distilled for a video game. And like it's so brilliantly done. It is both energizing and emotional and really well made. And I mean, I'm someone who's looking forward to Boyfriend Dungeon since it was first announced by Kid Fox Games. You're going to give me a game where I can date my weapons, is hella queer, and it's a dungeon crawler. I'm in. I'm in. And it didn't disappoint. I love the game. I haven't finished the DLC, which came out this year. But I love the soundtrack. I listen to it all the time. In fact, my spouse now recognizes the songs, not in a similar way to your experience, Claire, like not because they've played the game, but because I've played it so many times in the car that they just know, oh, this is Boyfriend Dungeon.
Nice.
That's awesome.
And they genuinely enjoy it, as far as I know, too, which is nice because it's a fun synth pop record. The lyrics are great. There's a song for your cat companion that you can get, which is obviously a friend and not a romantic partner because it's not that kind of game. but that song, the first time my spouse heard it, they were like, is there meowing? Is there meowing in this track? Which it was a favorite moment for me. But yeah, it's just really great. If you really like pop music, I think, like, especially Claire, since you say you do listen to soundtracks divorced from listening to the game, playing the games, I think you would really enjoy this one. Because in a similar way to Sayonara Wild Hearts, one of my shout-outs that is not on this list, but is also incredible, it is definitely a great record that you could listen to without having ever played the game because the music is just that good.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's a great pick.
I think I'm sold. I think you literally just sold. I'm going to, after we're done this, I'm turning this off. I'm going to go and listen to that soundtrack right now. Like, you've literally just sold.
It's on Spotify. It is. I think you will really, really dig it.
And I will further sell the game. I think the soundtrack is great, but I love the gameplay loop of that game and just the whole vibe. And the art style was really cool. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the more like relaxing dungeon crawler roguelites I've played in recent years. So another shout out for that as well. Yeah, that's a great pick. Coming back around to you, Travis, for your number 4.
So my number 4, this one I went back and forth with a little bit, but it is Super Metroid. Kenji Yamamoto,
yes, it is.
It's so good. Like, I think it's the case for this is it's the atmosphere that it creates. It's mm-hmm. It's another one of these games. It's kind of like Journey. There's no voiceover. There's no talking. There's no outright narrative that you're not you're experiencing the narrative just by what you're seeing and what you're hearing, but it's not just given to you in text form in any way. You're just kind of discovering things as you go, right? And I mean, like, what is it, Brinstar Depths, like the jungle, mm-hmm. and the underground one, those two are they're so atmospheric, and just I'll just put those on in the background and just like have them play on a loop, and it's just, it's calming but also a little unnerving, and I love it. It's like, it just gives me those feels, and it's, I don't know, I couldn't not have it on this list, even though it does feel more like it's like the ambience and like atmospheric, but there's just something about it that is just so effective at creating the mood for that game.
Yeah, Super Metroid.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Super Metroid is one of those, like, it was almost on my list. It was for a little while, and then I took it off. Super Metroid's not my favorite game in the franchise. That's Metroid Fusion. Maybe Metroid Dread. They're like in
contention. How much I love Metroid Fusion. I cannot say that I love Metroid Fusion, but
I don't think the soundtrack is as iconic, because I think the thing that makes Super Metroid iconic is it just took what the Nintendo Metroid did and scaled it up, like took the 8-bit sounds to the 16-bit level and like just improved them all. Also, a special shout out to the Nerdcore rapper Samus with 2 M's, who got her start rapping over beats from Metroid and actually has a Metroid EP.
That's awesome.
I will share that in our group chat after this.
Yeah, please.
But she is a PhD. She's awesome. Just one of the most badass creators I've ever met, and has done a ton of great music since then. But one of her early EPs was just 5 or 6 tracks over like Metroid related beats, and it's just, they're great. And it's about Samus. Like, it is an actual story of Samus. Mm-hmm. Like, she raps from the perspective of Samus, which is also really great.
That's awesome.
That's so cool.
Do you keep selling me on all these things? I don't have enough free time to listen to everything.
Look, I told you I'm a music nerd. I can't help it. It's just, this happens.
Oh, that's fantastic. I feel like I was super late to the party with Super Metroid. I never had a Super Nintendo growing up. And I got the SNES Classic and plugged it in, and that was the first game I wanted to play as a fan of Fusion and the later games. But that game holds up from a gameplay perspective, from a music perspective. The art is still awesome. Like, it controls so well, and I love that it's getting highlighted here, because I think retro games especially, like, deserve their representation in this discussion, because they did so much with so much less tech and resources, and like what they were able to accomplish, and the fact that we're talking about ambience and like overall tone with a game that was made
16-bit, like
decades ago. Like, I just think that's really amazing.
Yeah.
Awesome. Claire, your number 4.
So my number 4 is the soundtrack for Horizon Zero Dawn. Nice. By some folks, I'm going to do my best. Joris Deman, The Flight, and Niels van der Leest.
Awesome.
So this is kind of... I will not say that this is the first game soundtrack that I just like binge listened to on a loop for hours and hours and hours, because it's not the first. But I did listen to it a lot when it first came out. This was a solid year's worth of this is what I listened to when I was writing my essays in college.
Oh my gosh.
I remember like senior thesis projects, and you were like, the cello theme
in a
of
loop. It's
Horizon Zero Dawn is like
still
etched
my
into my
ringtone
mind.
For my alarm gosh. When I wake up in the morning, like the main theme. And I think the first like 45 minutes of the soundtrack are just absolutely stellar. And then about halfway through, there's so much like variety in the styles at that point in the soundtrack. It can be a little jarring when you're writing, but to listen to it for fun, it's interesting how you can hear the characters of all the different areas in the world and the actual like characters that you're interacting with in the music as you go through and you listen to the soundtrack. You do hear those story beats. In the music, like
that.
We were talking about with Undertale, and I actually played the game, so I recognized those in this one. And it's just, the music is wonderful within and without the context of the game as well. So
nice.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I love Horizon so much. I'm glad that like you mentioned it, because Horizon's just it's just so good. Horizon is just such a great, well-built, all-around game. And, yeah. like, I don't think the music in that game gets enough recognition for probably, like, it doesn't ever really get talked about. And it's interesting that, like, yeah, I love that you're pulling it out because it's not something that regularly, like, makes a bunch of lists for, you know, best music from a game because people just don't automatically think about it. But, no, it is so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's one of those games that I like. We talked about Uncharted earlier, like cinematic from start to finish. Like I played it for the first time last year in anticipation of the new game, which I still haven't played yet. And like all of those most impactful moments, the music is, again, in a very movie-esque way, is absolutely part of why those moments stand out. Like you know, the tragic deaths, the important plot points, all of them are reflected in the music as well as the scene itself.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's so good. It's one that I'm glad to see the new game highlighted in the music category. So hopefully we hear some Game Awards orchestra medley performance.
I love that orchestra medley.
Like those are always so fun. And I want to hear some hype Horizon music.
Yeah, I haven't played the new game at all, so I have no idea how the new one soundtrack is, but.
It's very good.
Stand by the original.
I don't
for
know
sure.
if I could really like distinguish between the first game and the new one in terms of the music, but it, to Matt's point, like it keeps that momentum of, you know, illustrating this cinematic moments and kind of amplifying what you're doing in the game and bringing the story and setting the tone really well. Yeah. So
the use of the instruments and the different instruments that are used for the themes for each part of the world is also really interesting. Like the, whether the percussion is heavier, has a heavier role, or if it's more like flute and winds, it's cool.
Well, and to your point about how like partway through the soundtrack, listening through it, like it's like, oh, this is like jarring because it's so different, but like the different environments in the game, or when you go like down into the dark cauldrons and you have like more intense fights versus like the more like nature-based environments and you're exploring, like, yeah, that's all really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Alrighty, my number four is Cuphead by Christopher Madigan. Came out in 2017. I love Cuphead, and I think the music is a huge part of my love of Cuphead. Obviously, the cartoon art style and the animations, I think, are like what immediately catches your eye with that game. But for me, it was the jazz music, it was the old-timey theme song intro that I like still sing randomly at any given time if I'm feeling inclined. And yeah, it's just such a nice vibe. I brought it home over the holidays the year it came out and showed it to my parents, and we were all just like, it was just, it's a wholesome game that is surprisingly difficult that you wouldn't expect upon appearance, but just like, I just feel happy when I hear the music of Cuphead, and I can't not have it on this list.
Yeah.
As the actual senior citizen on the podcast who remembers who remembers Popeye and Betty Boop and Felix the Cat and all that stuff, although I was a kid when those came out and they had been out for a long time. But like remembering watching those cartoons growing up, especially on Cartoon Network, like when this game came out, I've still not played it because of the difficulty. But like I've watched videos, I've watched, I think, the first episode of the TV show. I need to watch the rest of it, but like I've watched videos and I've listened to the soundtrack. This is one where I've listened to the soundtrack but not played the game, and it's absolutely the vibe of the time while still being very modern. It's what I love the trend in indie games is to emulate where the game is coming from but still modernize it in a way that makes it more relevant to contemporary music. It's brilliant. For sure. It's really well done.
Yeah, absolutely.
I wish I'd played it.
It's never too late.
I know.
And the DLC came out this year, so it's relevant in conversation again.
My backlog is just progressively getting bigger and bigger tonight. So yeah. I guess
that's the way of it.
Minus you. I never finished Cuphead, in all fairness, but the music and the style of the game kept me like persevering through the difficulty. I wanted to keep playing because I wanted to see what the next world would look like, what the boss theme would be like, what it's a delightful game.
Yeah.
Matt, you're next with your number four.
It's the aforementioned Undertale.
Love it.
So the thing about this game for me also is that the characters are so well written, but not even just that, but the sound design and their music is also mm-hmm. so well written. Like, I think of Papyrus and Sans often, and when I think of them as I am now, I already hear their theme music in my head. Like, it's playing as I talk. I also was very lucky enough to go on RPG University, podcast hosted by the incredible Scott White. And one of the episodes I did Chrono Trigger, and then my second episode was Undertale. And at the time, he did these sketches where he would let the guest pick their favorite scene, and then we would reenact it and do VO for it, and then he would put it over the scene. Nice. And so, of course, I chose the scene where Papyrus and Sans first meet the child. And that whole interaction. And so I got to voice Sans in that scene, and he voiced Papyrus, and it was
nice.
I think it's still on the RPG University YouTube. It's worth watching. It was a blast to do. But like, the music is so much more than just the game or the story. It's the personalities and the characters too. Like, I can hear each individual character's theme as I think of them.
Yeah.
And I think that's to the credit of what a music nerd that Toby Fox is. And he's gone on to do songs for Sword and Shield. He's going to be on, he has songs for Scarlet and Violet. Like,
oh, cool.
He's been working with Nintendo quite a bit since Undertale came out. But like, the music, I think, is such a strong part in this game. We were talking about these other cinematic games, but I think even RPGs, battle themes, character themes, RPGs are so reliant on music to like set the scenes and the tone, especially before the days of voice acting. Like, and I think Toby tapped into that with Undertale, absolutely emulating those RPGs of the past and present by doing that with this soundtrack.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I feel like Undertale is the unofficial music game of this podcast. Like, we were going to give one award, I think, just based on the pure enthusiasm. It's awesome. Claire, what's your next pick? Or I'm sorry, Travis, then.
Yeah,
then
I was going to say, it's not my turn yet.
I'm already messing it up again.
Oh my gosh.
Look at me.
So, like, par for the course here, my next pick is actually another, like, Super Nintendo title. It's the Donkey Kong Country, like, David Wise did Donkey Kong Country. I put one, but also two is just equally as amazing, if not better. So mm-hmm. it's very hard for me to pick between those two.
Is it the same composer for all three?
Yeah, David.
Do you know? Okay.
I don't know about the third one, to be
honest.
But
for sure, two. Okay.
Yeah, I know definitely for sure, two. There was additional help by, it's Evelyn Novakovic, helped a few of the tracks on the first one, but the second game is entirely David Wise. And it's kind of what you were talking about before, Luke, about how with so little, it created such like atmosphere and environment for each level. Like each mm-hmm. level has such a personality because mm-hmm. each song for each level is so different, but also the same. And they just, there's like aquatic ambience is just perfect.
I was just going to mention it.
You cannot say that like aquatic ambience is perfect background music. Like you just mm-hmm. put that on 8-hour loop. You're good. That's your entire
<You're>
day.
<good.
laughs>
That's amazing.
But even then, like the stuff, like the tracks for like the minecart track mm-hmm. just gives you like a sense of anxiety, and mm-hmm. the minecart tracks are super anxiety inducing. Right. And then, even like Fear Factory is just so good. And then if I was going to pull anything from the second game, it's Sticker Brush Symphony is just like perfect, like ambience music. And there's like a sadness to that song too. And it's just, I don't know. The remixes that happened in Smash Bros. For Sticker Brush were great too. Like it's just, I cannot, it's, that was one of the first games that I ever played was Donkey Kong Country. And it, a lot of this is tied to nostalgia, but I still go back to the soundtrack over and over and over again because they're just the like part of my brain that like, it just, I'm like, oh, this feels good. Like putting on aquatic ambience just feels good. Like I just feel at peace. And I think it's just a big part that they could do so much with so little in such a, like this little cartridge has like all of this music. And it kind of just blows my mind that it can exist when at the time they didn't have, you know, whole symphonies to be able to compose all these things and stick it on a little cartridge and still have the same effect, right? So that's the last of my like NES stuff, but I mean even the rest of my list after this is still like kind of samey too. So I don't know. I must have a type of music that I have that I like a lot. But yeah,
no, this, that's great.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree. Like, the Super Nintendo, I think, has some of the best soundtracks in the history of video games. Like, games that were originally on my list that I ended up taking off are, like, Mega Man X and Donkey Kong Country, Super Metroid. I do have a Super Nintendo game on my list that we'll get to later, which I think is the pinnacle of music on the Super Nintendo, but, like, Final Fantasy VI. Like, although it was three at the time for us, the whole... everyone knows that story at this point. Like, Super Nintendo, I think, has some of the... Super Mario RPG, which was also on my list at one point, and then I took off. Like, Super Mario RPG, I think, is some of the best music in RPG history, and some of Square Enix's best work, both gameplay-wise and music-wise, and they're all my honorable mentions. But I agree. I think there's something about the limits of the 16-bit era that made them just be able to do more. And Donkey Kong Country is a great example of that. I mean, you mentioned Aquatic Ambience, but, like, that's the first song I hear when we talk about this game. Like, it just pops into my head, riding the swordfish. Like, I can envision it perfectly. I love that. I played Tropical Freeze on the Switch when it came out. I didn't play it on the 3DS originally, and or the Wii U, wherever it was. And David Wise came back for that one. I don't think he had done the other Donkey Kong Returns, but he came back for Tropical Freeze. He might have done stuff for the other ones, but I know, like, Tropical Freeze was his baby. And, like, you can all new music, but you can hear his influence throughout it based on the stuff that had come before.
There's definitely some mixes in the Returns series that has, like, remixes of some of those older songs in those games that just pump it up, but also just work in terms of ambience and effect and how giving each level a flavor. And so each level feels so distinct because they have that song that just kind of, like, sets the tone for it, right? You can have a bunch of jungle levels, but each one feels different, right?
Yeah, like, totally.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great pick. That's another one where I didn't have a Super Nintendo and played on the SNES Classic and fell in love with it immediately, and I still think it holds up. And yeah, the music's really, really good.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Nice.
Okay, Claire, now you're next pick.
All right. So my number three, this is the one that I was referencing earlier that Luke played this one first, and I wasn't really interested in playing it myself, but the music just was so grabbing, and I would just watch him play it, and I would just like, no, don't put your headphones on. I wanna hear the music while I'm doing whatever. This one came out 2020, so... during quarantine, this was like the event of the household when we were locked down. This is the music for Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Yeah.
Love it. And it's so good.
It's so good.
And I wasn't going to play it. And then I was like, I gotta play it. And I haven't, I never finished it, but I got way further in than I would have expected to. And I watched him play basically the entire game. And yeah, it's just like the remixes of the main theme in different points throughout the game.
Yeah.
Every time he did the squats challenge, I would get up the pull ups. I would get up and dance along with the remix. It's such a jam. And yeah, just like the character of the different themes. It's the sweeping orchestral, like very cinematic moments. Throughout the game at those big important scenes in the game, and the way that the music it's so well done. It can rival any soundtrack outside of video games, like any piece of music, I think. So
yeah, totally.
That's my high praise.
Yeah, that's such a special game. I never had a Final Fantasy game resonate with me in the same way that 7 Remake did. I completed the entire game. I couldn't get enough of it, and the music is just incredible, and it lends itself so well to the story and every moment and every environment. And we could have a whole podcast just talking about Final Fantasy VII.
It's literally taking, like, kind of what we said about the old games and how, like, the original Final Fantasy VII has such a feel to it too, but then applying it to such a big cinematic kind of game, kind of in the same way that, like, you know, we've said Uncharted does, you know, and Horizon, they have those big cinematic moments, but they just feel so much better when you recognize those tunes from that original game. It's just it's so good.
Yeah, I mean, Nobuo Uematsu is a legend, and fun fact, spreading the knowledge and continuing to, in the 2000s, from 2002 to 2010, Nobuo Uematsu actually formed a metal band called the Black Mages. And they covered a ton of stuff from previous Final Fantasy games, including Genova's theme from Final Fantasy VII, which is one of my favorite versions of that song.
That's incredible.
If you've not heard their music, please go check that out, because it is literally a progressive metal band, symphonic rock band, formed by past composers of the Final Fantasy series. It's incredible. Adding that to my list of things to do tonight.
That's
amazing. Yeah, we're going to be up late listening to all this music after.
But yeah, Final Fantasy VII was another one that fell off my list, but was on it for a while because I used to listen to the battle themes from that game on loop, as well as One Winged Angel, of course, like constantly. And, you know, even the remixes they did for Advent Children when that came out, which was a huge event, and then all the additional remixes that they did for this game, like, it's just unbelievable. And, like, there was a time where I was, like, a little skeptical of Remake. I was like, I love this game. There's no way I'm going to feel the same emotion I felt when I first played this new one. And then that opening scene, the sweeping crawl, the show of the logo, even though they changed some of that opening scene, they changed a lot of it because it's meant to be a different thing. I still re-fell in love with it all over again.
Yeah.
Like, the music is just incredible. The score is incredible. One of my favorite things to watch, if you haven't seen this clip, is the voice actress of Aerith, or Aeris, or however you want to pronounce it. We're still fighting over that. Is also a streamer, has been a streamer for a long time. And she had not, like, she did all her performance, but had not seen the final product until she got a copy of the game to play. And she streamed the first scene. You see her when she talks to Cloud. And, like, she's just crying openly on stream hearing her own performance. It's brilliant. If you have not looked that up, I can't remember her name, but look her up. It was brilliant.
It's beautiful.
It's a magical game. It's in, like, for new fans, old fans, I'm so excited for Rebirth, I think, is the next one. No. What is the next one? I don't remember what it is. Yeah. Rebirth might be the Crisis Core re-release. But either way, I'm excited to see where this series...
I think that one's Reunion.
Rebirth is too.
They announced a lot of R-word remake games in that event. Very excited for both games.
Is Kingdom Hearts Rebirth? I don't even know.
It doesn't. Square Enix. Who cares? But
yeah,
all
the same. Re something.
But yeah, it's an incredible game, and I agree. I think it's some of the best versions of Final Fantasy music we've ever heard.
For sure, that's awesome. All right, I'm gonna kick things off with my number three pick, Unpacking. Another recent release from last year, Jeff Van Dyke. I adore Unpacking. I have gushed about Unpacking. Anywhere anyone will let me talk about Unpacking, I will talk about Unpacking. But the music is so special to me. It just was another game similar to Journey where I had no expectations going in. I just decided to give it a try on a whim and was immediately sucked in. I think the music has this meditative like quality that I just found so relaxing and so comforting, and it's very like simple music objectively speaking, but it's so nice, and the sound design in that game is also really satisfying as you're organizing your different living situations throughout your character's life and experiencing the environmental storytelling within the narrative, and all the elements of the game I think just work so well together, and the music is just like best vibes, you know, wholesome, good natured vibes that just like put me at ease.
Yeah. I never finished Unpacking. I got to a point where there were too many rooms and my style of organization didn't mesh with the designer style of organization. And I know you can turn it off so you can put anything anywhere, but I didn't want to do that. But the music was great. It was incredible. It really set the scene every time you got to a new room or a new apartment or a new house. It just kind of brought out the personality of each space that you were essentially living in while you were organizing.
Yeah, I just got like hyper focused with that game, and I remember the music. It was like I just played for like hours and just got super sucked in the best way.
Yeah, I think that that game also does the thing of it tells you what the character is feeling. Like, it really allows you into the headspace, especially when you get to like the boyfriend's apartment and the music is just like really tense and uneasy and uncomfortable and you just feel like you don't belong there. But then you get to the end and it feels like coming home, and it feels like you finally found that place. And the end, I will I openly weep every time that I think about the ending of that game. So love it. I won't go there, but yeah, it's beautiful.
For sure. Alrighty. Going back to Matt for your number three.
So my number three is one that I've not heard a lot of people talk about, but I've been obsessed with since I played the game. So Eastward is a action RPG that came out in 2021. Think of your like top-down Zeldas. It's very similar to that with much, much more, but that's like kind of a base starting point for those who've played the Zelda games. It's got this 16-bit aesthetic that, like, it's like my favorite game that I'll talk about next, or one of my favorite games that I always say this with that, but this has this, like, 16-bit aesthetic, but could never run on a Super Nintendo. But, like, it's, like, paying homage to that. And the music is doing the same thing. It's composed by Joel Korlitz. Jeff and I were lucky enough to interview Joel on Fun and Games, which was an incredible conversation. Joel has also worked on stuff for Halo and a bunch of other games, too. But this was one of his, like... He's done a few soundtracks, but this was one of his like most recent, like, this is my soundtrack. I did the whole thing and it's incredible. It is some of my favorite chiptune music. I can hear the cooking theme currently because I cooked a lot in that game and it always plays the same little tune every time. But like, so many of the tracks are incredible. The main theme for Sam, who's one of the protagonists of the game, like, it's just sweet and like, it's like cotton candy personified in music form, and it's just awesome. Very, very well made, but all of the music really is very scene setting, and I have a ton of favorite tracks, too many to list, but like City Night is really great, Emergency is a really great track, all of the boss themes in the game are really great, Iron Carbine, which is also the name of a vehicle in that game, is probably my favorite track on the whole record, but like, it's just, we've said this a bunch about scene setting through music. And I've said about action RPGs and JRPGs especially, and this game is no exception. And like, while I don't have a ton of classic games on my list, though I've mentioned a bunch already, this is like my homage to them because this, and talking to Joel when we interviewed him, like, clearly you were inspired from games of your youth because like, you just hear it. You hear the inspiration in the music. And this is another one I will highly recommend, even if you've not played the game. If you like JRPGs, if you like, you know, chiptune music, like, it is absolutely worth listening to, 100%.
Matt, people should be paying you to sell things because I'm going to be spending so much money right now because of all the things that you keep telling me to go look into that I'm convinced to go look into. So pay Matt.
I will say, if you are a Switch fan, Eastward ran perfectly on Switch. It's gorgeous on the OLED screen. I've been wanting to replay it, though I haven't yet, because I played it just before I got my OLED.
Nice.
But it's just, if you like Zelda games, you have to play this game because it is effectively that plus more.
I'm glad you mentioned the Switch note because I was going to ask. It sounds like a really good Switch or Steam Deck game, just like cozy up with a coffee or a tea and enjoy it.
Yeah, 100%.
Awesome. That's all. That's great.
Nice.
All right, coming back around the horn to Travis for your number two. Are we at number two?
We are. Yeah. How many more times can we talk about Undertale?
Infinite.
Undertale's my
it's
number
an
two.
Infinite amount of times.
Yeah. I like. We've already said so many things about this game. It's the music is just so good at creating emotion. Those kind of, it was mentioned before, the like the boss fights for are so good because each character's theme is just so good. And when those themes get replayed again later in the game, depending on when that character shows up again, it's so effective. Like you mentioned, Matt, the like hearing like themes in your head as soon as I say Undyne, I hear that dun, 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 dun. Like it just it's stuck. It's just permanently etched into my brain. I don't think I can listen to the first couple notes of Hopes and Dreams without tearing up. Like I'm not able
every
to
time.
I'm not able to get past it. Like every single time I get goosebumps. And there was something about playing that game and reaching that ending, like doing a pacifist run and reaching that ending, and how the game built in was so effective at creating this story with the music. Like Toby Fox, just genius. Like just so good. We've talked about it to death already, but yeah, Undertale is my number two. I love it so much. And obviously everyone else does too. So
nice.
Never stop the Undertale love.
Yeah.
Yep.
Going over to Claire for her number two.
So my number two is one of my favorite games ever. And for me, the music from Subnautica Below Zero is such an essential part to the game, and the changing of the theme for each biome that you're in, and how it just really, it is that, I can't remember what game we were talking about earlier, but it is that thing of like, there's, it's peaceful and it's beautiful, but it's also really unnerving and unsettling and kind of makes you feel constantly on edge. Yeah. Even the themes that are like really light and beautiful, like I don't have like track names memorized or anything, but it's the theme that plays when you are in the lily pads biome. It's so beautiful, but it's just a little haunting too. Like it does not let you forget that you are underwater and can die at any time, or freezing to death above ground for that part of the game too, and that you're living in a world of extinction and tremendous loss. And it's so great. But it is the thing of, like, you have to build your base, and I'm going to build my base over here so that the theme that's constantly playing is this theme, because it's that special. And it just, I'm going to go to this biome now because I want to hear this song. it is just such an integral part. And also the, if you go to a place that's meant to scare you, the music is terrifying. And there's some, like, just the way that and Subnautica did this really well too, of there are some tracks that are just terrifying.
Yeah.
Just so unsettling.
You mentioned it's got that Metroid vibe where it's just like it's beautiful sounding, yes, but then there is that edge of like I don't feel safe. And but that's where it kind of like you get that heightened sense of emotion, right? And it's interesting how much music can be so impactful and just create those like physical responses in your body. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of nuts. I saw here it's Ben, is it Prunty? Is that how you say that last name?
I think so.
Yeah. He did Into the Breach, which I love. Oh, Into the Breach. And awesome. That was almost on my list. That was one that almost made it multiple times where I was like, I love this music to Into the Breach. But if it's him, I have no doubts that it's really good. I haven't listened to Subnautica, but the soundtrack, but I'm definitely going to take a look now, especially seeing that it is him who composed it. So
yeah.
Very cool.
Oh
no, go ahead, Claire.
I was just going to say it's so good, and it's really interesting to compare it to the original game soundtrack, which was composed by somebody else.
Oh, interesting. I'm
totally blanking on that composer's name. But it's so different in the vibe. Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah, my experience with Subnautica Below Zero is very limited. Talking to my friends mostly and some streams that I've seen, and like I kept saying, oh, it's a horror game, right? And they're like, no. I was like, well, I don't know. The stuff I watched with like my friend, like diving underwater, giant like octopuses circling, like I was like, this seems pretty scary to me. And that music was pretty creepy. So like the vibes are definitely there, but it is gorgeous. Like there are, like, it was funny. I was watching my friend Derek play it, and like in one moment we'd be in awe of a beautiful scene, and then in the next moment he'd be absolutely panicking because like there was some creature coming towards him. And like I think that that's really interesting and brilliant, and I've wanted to play the Subnautica series for a while. It's on the list. But I've heard great things, and the music that I've heard is incredible.
Yeah, I think that the music really captures, and the game really captures that sense of like complete awe and wonderment, and also fear, because you know that what you are experiencing is so beyond you as beyond us as a human being. And I think it's the axis, the intersection of the ocean and space are two places where it's like it's vast and it's gorgeous and it is ruthless too. And I think the music captures that so perfectly.
Yeah, that sense of scale for sure. That's a good one. This one for me is similar to some of your entries. I recognize the music, and the music resonated with me through watching you play it, or like hearing you play it in the other room. The music in this game is something really special. So I'm glad you got to shout it out. We need to have a spinoff Subnautica podcast, I feel like, for you. You've done the groundwork to lay the foundation for it, for that series. I'll jump to my number two pick, Halo Combat Evolved. One of my favorite games of all time. This is another kind of nostalgia pull for me. My uncle introduced me to the Halo series when I first got my Xbox when I was 7. Maybe not the age I should have been playing Slayer on Blood Gulch, but, you know, I loved it and I'll never forget it. And the music was, I think, key to my enjoyment. It's so epic, really set the scale of the space battles, and peak cool video games, I feel like, for me is flying in a Banshee or driving a Warthog and having that music kick in at just the right moment, and nothing can beat that for me with the Halo series.
I had high hopes of playing all the remastered versions before Halo Infinite came out, and that didn't happen. But I did replay 1 and 2, and booting up the first game and hearing the choir and hearing that opening theme and da-na-na-na, like, it's just the build, it's just so good. Talking about being obsessed with pop albums, like, Halo 2 had a ton of pop tracks on it. Incubus had done a bunch of stuff for it. A Breaking Benjamin track that I still love to this day was one of the featured singles off that. They've done such incredible work with the music over the years. And Halo is nothing. It's another game that was, like, elevated, especially at a time that wasn't, like, just about music and about being cinematic. It was still pretty cinematic for the time. If I could tell a slight tangent story that is music related to Halo 1. So Halo 1, for those who don't know, was mostly an offline game. You couldn't really play online with it. It was mostly 4-player split screen. And I often played it with my friends Brian and Joe. The three of us would play at my friend Brian's house and always play. And we learned very early on that the rocket launcher was so slow in that game. And I'm telling you, the slowest rocket launcher in the history of video games. It was so slow that our friend Joe discovered that you could sing the entire Doug theme before it hit your enemy. Randomly. Doug, for those who don't remember, was a Nicktoon that was very popular when I was a kid. Still love to this day. So it got to the point where we would start playing matches and, like, we would just be running around. We couldn't find Joe. Me and Brian would be looking for him. And then we'd just hear, he'd just start singing it to himself. And we knew a rocket is coming from somewhere. And we'd start panicking. Where's the rocket? Where's it coming from?
Oh, my gosh.
Which is some of my fondest memories. And I cannot think of that soundtrack without thinking of that very music-specific story that has actually nothing to do with the soundtrack.
Yeah, I'm like, your number one is hilarious. The theme from Doug.
Music brings people together, you know? It does. In different ways. I love that. That's fantastic.
That is. You know, it's funny. Earlier I said that Horizon wasn't the first soundtrack that I just listened to without... not without the game, but that I just listened to while doing other things for fun. This was the first one that I just would put on and leave on.
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
Love that. This is still the one for me that, like, when they did the Shadow Drop Halo Infinite multiplayer announcement and they had the live musicians and choir, goosebumps. That main theme, it'll always stick with me. Next up, Matt, with your number two.
So this is where we're actually in order. The other three could have been in literally any order, but this is my second favorite video game soundtrack of all time. It is one of my favorite video games of all time. And if anyone here is coming from Fun and Games, you already know what game it is because me and Jeff never miss mentioning it on almost every episode. It is, of course, Shovel Knight, Shovel of Hope. We both love this game. It's one of our favorite games of all time. And this soundtrack by Jake Kaufman and Manami Matsume is one of the best video game soundtracks ever made. It's just incredible what Jake did with... This is clearly meant to be a 16-bit soundtrack. It sounds so much like it. But the sound card on a Super Nintendo could never run it. Actually, I think it's more akin to because it looks visually like a Nintendo game that could never run on Nintendo. So I think it's even closer to 8-bit than 16-bit. And, like, there's no way a Nintendo could run... That sound chip would melt playing the soundtrack. But it is absolutely paid an homage to it. And, like, I say Shovel of Hope, but it's the whole treasure trove. Like, I love every game in that franchise, every story, every night. But Shovel of Hope specifically has some, like, Strike the Earth is one of my favorite video game songs of all time. Tons of indie rappers I know have, like, sampled it and rapped over it. Like, it is just such a kick-ass track that immediately gets you hype the minute you start playing that first stage. Shovel Knight, I feel like, for me, revitalized my love of video games. I had already really loved video games, and like, but I've taken hiatuses over the year, go several years without playing games or owning a certain console or whatever. And I remember when Jeff and I started Fun and Games, we were recording at his apartment because it was when we still recorded in person, a thing that almost never happens anymore. And I was looking, he's a video game collector, for those who don't know. So he's got a wall, like people have bookshelves of video games, Super Nintendo, Nintendo, old, new, it doesn't matter. And I was looking through it. I was just being nosy. I was like, oh, Shovel Knight, I've heard about that game. And Jeff's like, you've never played it, Matt? Because he knew my taste. I was like, no, why? He's like, Matt, it's on the Switch, but you have to play it. I'm lending you my I think it was his 3DS copy or DS copy. I can't remember which it was. And so I took it home and I played it. And after an hour, I closed the clamshell and went, I cannot play this anymore because I need to buy the Switch version immediately. And I returned Amazing. It to him and then bought it. And like, it not only like reinvigorated my love of video games, but I think put me on the map of understanding what indie games were. Because before that, indie games were Xbox Live Arcade games, because mostly that's where I played a lot of indie games, like Explosion Man and a bunch of others. But this was the first time I was truly aware of an indie video game scene, the Kickstarter launches of games, and what you could do when you were trying to pay homage to classic games. And that's absolutely what Shovel Knight is from toe to tip, is paying homage to what came before while doing something wholly original.
I have not played Shovel Knight, and I'm desperate to play Shovel Knight. It's like right in my wheelhouse, and I have not had the chance to play it, and I'm desperate to play it.
I'm telling you, just buy that treasure trove. It's totally worth it.
I will do it because I've already put in hundreds of dollars tonight, so I...
Add it to the cart, you know what I mean?
Add it to the list.
Yeah, yeah.
Who cares?
Shovel Knight Dig was another one this year that really spoke to me and like further reinforced that like Jake Kaufman and Shovel Knight... Just amazing music and always hits.
Always, yeah.
Next up we have Travis with your number one.
Yes.
We have made it to the number one slot.
This is my actual, like the list fluctuates a lot, but I really sat down and looked at this list, I was like, this is my number one and it has always been my number one. And it is the soundtrack to Celeste by Lena Rain. It is perfection.
As I wear my Celeste.
As you literally are
right
wearing
now,
a Celeste hoodie right now. Celeste is a really special game, and it speaks to you on a lot of different levels in terms of mental health and like feeling like finding yourself and all these things. And a big part of that game, yes, there's the big narrative story to it with Madeline and Battleline and all that stuff. But when like the music plays such a key role in that, and this is like the perfect marriage of like gameplay and music for me, where it just feels like the music is also informing on the story at the same time that you're playing every level, but every track for every like climb for every little level that you're playing, it's still great. And like, there's still a bop in there, or there's still like, there's just something about this soundtrack that it just works so well. It's kind of in the same vein as Journey a little bit, in that it builds as you're climbing the mountain. And like, even there's a big fall, and there's a really like, I've listened to the soundtrack so many times all the way through. I can't even count the number of times I've done it. And you feel that fall, and then you're building back up. And the way that Reach for the Summit as like the final like song that traverses the entire mountain and takes and samples from all of the tracks along the way and all the levels, and how it builds, like I will put on Reach for the Summit and just to pump me up, because it's just that track that just pumps me up and makes me feel like I have made it out of whatever the issue might be, right? Like, this soundtrack has something for every emotion, and it ends with such an invigorating, like, okay, I like, in kind of the same message of the game, like, I may still have, like, there may still be something there, but I have made it past, or I've worked through an issue. And Reach for the Summit just kind of like makes that in music form for me. And I may not be able to articulate it as well as I want to, but it's just it's such a powerful soundtrack for me that I don't know. Celeste is just such a great game, and I can only sing its the highest of praises for this game and the way that each of these tracks makes me feel.
Travis, awesome. You've done it. You've done it. I should share with you that you've had the Matt Storm effect on me. To be completely honest, I've not played Celeste yet. I've wanted to for a long time. I have it, I think, on Epic Games, but I've been holding out to eventually buy it on Switch because I feel like that's the place
it's
to
really
play that
game.
It's
really good on Switch. Yeah, pick it up, put it down. It's great, yeah.
And I've had limited experience with the music, but like I've never played it. But your pitch makes like I really think during the next video game break, which I think is early next year-ish, well, actually, that's not even true because they announced a bunch of stuff for January and February. And never mind. There's too many games. But the next time I have some space and some extra cash, I think I will finally pick up Celeste on Switch because I've been meaning to play it. And this is my not only do I know there's accessibility options. If it's too difficult, mm-hmm. you can turn it Definitely. Down, make it more of a story game. But you've not the first person to sing its praises musically, and I think I would really dig it. And I'm actually quite surprised still haven't played it yet. And your pitch absolutely sealed the deal. I think I definitely
Lena
have to go.
Lena just did something magical with this soundtrack. Like I literally don't know how she did it, but she just did something magical with the soundtrack, and I love it so much.
Yeah, I can only echo everything you said, Travis. I adore Celeste. It was almost on my list. It was so close, but. It's just such a special game, and the music is so, so incredible. And everything the game does with representing mental health, I feel like, is also reflected in the music. And as mm-hmm. you mentioned, like that journey and the way it culminates at the end, and it's so good.
It's just so good. I cannot recommend it enough. For even if you're not going to play the game, because it is a very hard game. Mm-hmm. Just listen to the music. Like you hear that journey as you go, and then you're just like, oh wow. And then when you hear those. After you're such a long journey, to hear those tunes and those samples from the previous levels in that final culmination as you're rising back up the mountain again, it just feels like, oh, I did it. And it's just so rewarding. And the music plays a huge part of that. I mean, it's also a very difficult game where like it takes you lots of tries, and it's very rewarding once you do get it. But the music plays a really big part of that too. So
yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Nice.
On to another very special game. Claire, your number one.
So my number one is Super Mario Galaxy, which is a very special game to me. And this soundtrack, this score, is just so impressive, and so it is something special. It does have the, you know, the blending of themes and the culminating moments, the remixes. I love the and just like some cool effects, like as you build up the observatory, the home base area, as you restore power, that like it adds instruments and texture to the theme that plays in the background. There's a mechanic where you're like using the motion controls on the Wii to roll the little ball around, and you're rolling on the ball, and that's how you traverse the environment. And the music speed changes in time with the speed of your ball. Like if you're rolling real slow, the music goes real slow, and if you start to go real fast, it starts to tumble. And it's just like those levels were really hard for young Claire Bear, and it was. It was just like it added to the suspense and the nerve wracking. It was like, okay, and there we go. When the music was doing it right along with you, and it just gets your heart rate up there. The music that plays in the last couple of levels, and I recently discovered and replaying the game when it came out on Switch recently. That you actually don't have to play the super hard levels at the end of the game in order to finish the game.
Yep.
Because when I was a kid, I was such a, I just 100%, like I was such a completionist. So I went through and I was just like, I gotta beat the levels before I see the end.
You beat the game with Luigi.
So I went, and those last couple levels, every time I hear the music that's playing in those levels, my heart rate gets up.
Yeah.
And it's such a jam, but also. Yeah.
Yeah,
there's something about the like. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say like this is obviously Koji Kondo as well as Mihiro Yokota, I believe. Koji Kondo, I mean, is a legend. Zelda, Mario, done so many soundtracks, and like for me, any of the Super Mario games could be on my list. My heart is, there's a special place in my heart for Super Mario 64, like one of the more magical video game experiences of my youth, just first time being in that world. But like, the thing about Super Mario Galaxy for me is that the first time I realized Mario could be epic in the way that a Halo and other games could be. Like, Mario's music is always light and fun, but that opening theme for Super Mario Galaxy, it's like, it's just a call to adventure, and it's really brilliantly done. I was disappointed with the Switch port, unfortunately, just because it just, they didn't do anything. They didn't do anything with them. I've complained about this in many places, but I'm happy to have it because Mario Galaxy is one of my favorite Mario games. It's just, I think all of the 3D Mario games are good in their own right for different reasons, but there's something about the epicness and the awe that Mario Galaxy inspires that Odyssey, I think, captured as well. But like, Galaxy was the first time that you really, as a, I felt like as a kid, like, that Mario became this epic hero that I've always kind of envisioned him to be, and that the games have always made him out to be. This is when I really, really felt it.
Yeah, and it is just so epic.
Yes.
And like the credits, the song that plays in the credits, where it like combines some of the most significant themes, and it's just like, oh, I listen to that and I get so emotional. I'm just like, if you're gonna listen to one piece of music from a video game, for me, it's like, I'm gonna show you this piece of music. And yeah, it's really special to me too, just like personally. And I did think about the other Mario games and their soundtracks, but this one, it just feels, Super Mario Galaxy soundtrack just feels, like you said, epic.
It's like a next level, like Mario. Yeah. Like when you think about like Mario, just you think there's like a classicness to like some of when you think Mario, Mario's music, you think of classics, but like Galaxy, yeah, it like takes it to that next step and just like brings it up so much higher to be like, look, this can be this thing, and it can be important. It can be epic. It can be like so much grander than like da, 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 da. Like it's just you know, it can be so much more, and it like you guys said, it's kind of the first time that really happened with that game, right? So it's super interesting that like Galaxy is just so much musically, it's just such a difference too, right? Like it's representational of how much different that game can actually be. So
yeah, absolutely. And every time the themes show up in like Mario Kart or Smash Bros. I'm just like, we're coming home. It's my theme.
I love it.
But yeah, that's amazing. And I also feel like I had similar vibes when I played Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope earlier this year. It just really invoked that tone and that that style and that level of epicness. And I think like the space and the galaxy vibes just like really sold it for me, and that's my favorite like era or style of Mario, I think.
And that's
especially in terms of the music.
And that's Grant Kirkhope, one of my favorite composers, and another previous guest of Funny Games, which I still don't feel is real. Like, I can't believe that's amazing. Spoke to Grant Kirkhope. Like, but like, we talked to him about the first Mario and Rabbids, and I was so excited when I heard he was doing the sequel as well. He's just, and for those who don't know, this is Donkey Kong 64, Banjo Kazooie, Banjo Tooie, GoldenEye, like the Donkey Kong Land games on
legendary,
Game Boy.
Yeah.
Like, he's just a legendary composer. And like, I agree. I think, I'm curious to talk to Grant. I'll hopefully get to talk to him again sometimes. But I really feel like there's no way he wasn't inspired by Mario Galaxy when doing a space-based Mario and Rabbids game.
Sure.
Like, because he's such a Nintendo nerd also. Like, I have to assume he was inspired by Galaxy. It just, you hear it in the themes. Like, it's just, I can't imagine it's a coincidence.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. All right, it's on to my number one pick. We're here, and this is a game that has been so special to me since the origins of this podcast. We started Lukewarm Games with a review for The Last of Us Part II, which is my number one. This is my favorite game of all time. This is my favorite soundtrack and score in video games. I think it's such a special game. I've never had a video game tie music so intricately into the narrative in such an impactful way as this game. Whether it's kind of the mainstay narrative piece with Pearl Jam's Future Days or Wayfaring Stranger or Ellie's cover of Take on Me by A-ha. Like, just felt so emotionally invested in the story, and I the musical moments and the way they worked it into the narrative, I just thought was incredibly well done. And I can't not hear Future Days and not tear up. I can't think about that game and not tear up. I just adore The Last of Us Part II, and I'm incredibly excited for the TV show coming up to see how they represent these thematic structures and the music and the characters.
This is a game that I played Last of Us 1 before Last of Us 2 came out on stream, mm-hmm. because it was so cinematic, and I'm like, this is a game that deserves an audience, and it was great and I loved it, and it was hard to play in the best way. And then the sequel came out at a very low point, not in my whole life, but like I was just very depressed at the time, and I looked at that game, I looked at the themes and went, nope, can't do it, gotta tap out on this one. I just the first one hit me so hard that I was like, I can't play this sequel right now. And then at the end of last year, I believe, shortly after I got my PS5, the bundle I bought came with two PS5 games and Last of Us Part II, the PS4 version. And I was like, you know what? I want to finally play this game. I want to see what it's about. And you're absolutely right, Luke. Like, it's a game that I love that I will never play again, because it was one of the hardest emotional video game experiences I've ever had. But it is so brilliantly told. And again, and we've talked about this a lot today, some of the most impactful emotional moments are absolutely because of the music in this. It's such a cinematic game. And like, I can hear like the conversations between Joel and Ellie in the early part of the game. Like, I hear that music and I couldn't agree more. I think it's like, a lot of people like to rag on Naughty Dog because they did make a PS5 version of a game that didn't really need it. And I played the PS4 version, which was the PS3 remaster or whatever.
Right.
It didn't need a remake. This game was already incredible, but it's cool to see it with the better graphics and all the stuff they put in Last of Us 2. But all of that hazing aside, it's still a very, very important, musically and storytelling-wise and creation-wise, important to the narrative of video games as a whole, and you can't deny that. And the soundtrack goes a lot of, I believe, also goes a long way for that.
There is something iconic about The Last of Us. Like, the type of music that plays in that game, you can just hear a couple notes and you're like, that reminds me of The Last of Us. Like, it just a couple of those guitar strings, you just hear the right like note and it's just like, that is The Last of Us. And I think that's the power of that soundtrack and the power of that score for that game, that it doesn't matter if it's like, it could be literally anything and you hear those notes and you're just like, that game was tied so intricately to the music that was in it. Like, those two games are known so much for their narrative and how, like, what a story that is. But the music is such an important part of that, and it's tied so intricately to it that now you hear a couple of those notes and you're like, let's say you're watching, you know, I don't know, some E3 thing, and you hear those notes and you're like, The Last of Us? Like, you just know. And it's super nondescript, but that's the power of that soundtrack. Like, it is that good that anyone can hear it and just know that they're talking about The Last of Us. Mm-hmm. And it's, I don't know, I loved the first game. I've only played halfway through the second, and I plan on playing through the rest of it when I get the time. But it is one of those games that is, it's just so emotional. And the music does play a big part of that. Like, the cinematic experience of experiencing the story with the music and everything. And I mean, music does play a decent role in that game in terms of Ellie with the guitar, especially in the second game. Like, it's just, I don't know, there's something very special about that game. And I love that it's your number one.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you aren't just like pulled into remembering, oh, it sounds like The Last of Us, but also like how it feels to play the game, and just like it's like you're just sucked right back in, like you could be playing the game right now. Just like
the tension, the emotions, the fear, the happiness, the sadness.
The sadness.
I really felt that with the trailer for the HBO show, which did use one of the songs from the first game.
And I think that's why that trailer is so good, because you're like, oh, this incredible. Is it. Like, it feels like it, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's also because Pedro Pascal is perfectly cast.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So,
and Gabriel Luna, too. Like, the two of them together, like, I couldn't imagine better brothers to do that journey. Like, it's perfect.
That trailer dropped, and Claire and I were sitting on our couch watching it on our TV, and we kept pausing at the second time we watched the trailer to do, like, frame-by-frame breakdown reactions as if we were making a piece of content, and then we were like, we're just doing this because we're so excited.
I think we watched it, like, 20 times.
Moments. Yeah, it was, oh, gosh. I adore The Last of Us, and kind of different ends of video game music spectrum compared to my Uncharted pick with Naughty Dog. I love The Last of Us for very different reasons and how like emotionally grounded it is and how the music represents that and those more mature themes, whereas Uncharted is that popcorn action fun video game for me. But I think Naughty Dog is one of my favorite developers, and I love how they are able to really masterfully execute both of those styles depending on the game.
Totally.
100%.
All right, Matt. The time has come. You're bringing it home with your number one pick.
So this isn't going to help the audience, but for the people on the call, I need visual aids for this, so pardon me for a moment.
Sure. Sure. Oh, like fit. You're getting props. I love it.
So the people at home aren't going to be able to see this, but I'm holding up an actual in-box copy of Chrono Trigger on Super Nintendo with the guide.
Oh, my gosh.
And the original CD soundtrack that I had to mail in for.
Oh, my gosh, it's beautiful.
My number one is Chrono Trigger by the aforementioned Nobuo Uematsu, as well as Yoshinori Mitsuda. I'm sure I butchered those names. I always do. Chrono Trigger is the most important game to me in my entire life. It is why I love JRPGs. I was introduced to it by my friend Roy when I was in, I think this was when I was in college already. I hadn't owned a Super Nintendo yet. It was one of the games that and Donkey Kong Country were the games that made me buy a Super Nintendo. And I became obsessed with this game, played it over and over again. It famously has many endings. It is my favorite game of all time. And its music is... It was the first game to show me that music could be cinematic in a video game, because before that I had played a lot of Turtles in Time and Super Mario World and games that are arcadey and like light and like, it's funny, I'm still discovering stuff about this game to this day. Magus, my favorite character from the game, famously the artwork for this game was done by Akira Toriyama, known for Dragon Ball Z and Dragon Ball, and of course Magus looks like a blue-haired Piccolo with pale skin. Piccolo also being my favorite character in Dragon Ball Z. There's a theme. But Magus' theme, when you first fight him, before he can be an ally, spoiler alert for a very old game, I guess, it is... I didn't realize this until very recently, but the song actually has a themes of bossa nova and, like, Hispanic origins in a 16-bit, you know, chiptune song. And I'm more knowledgeable about music now than I was when I first played this game, but listening to it recently, because I listen to the soundtrack all the time, I was like, oh my god, this is a bossa nova song. You could dance to Magus's theme. It's just one of those games that every cinematic moment, and it's my favorite version of this game is the 3DS version with the anime cutscenes that Akira Toriyama came back to do. Because it gives life to already very cinematic moments within the game's narrative that are now in animated versions. And what's really brilliant about the PlayStation version that was eventually ported to 3DS or to DS, which was better because the load times were shorter, they didn't replace the scenes from the game with the anime cutscenes. The anime cutscene would trigger, I believe, and then the actual scene from the game, the same scene that you just watched, would still play out within the game itself as well. They didn't replace them. They just enhance them, because you could see a different version, a different angle of it. It's just a soundtrack that I keep returning to. You know, honorable mentions that I didn't mention, like the reason that my number one wasn't Mass Effect was because I can't just put the first Mass Effect game soundtrack. It would have to be the whole trilogy. Because those soundtracks, like those games, are so intertwined. And with the release of the Legendary Edition, I could just put that, which is technically one game with all three games, as my number one. But I didn't want to do that because Chrono Trigger is my favorite game of all time. And I think that it's one of those games that it's the reason why we have our Shovel Knights, we have our Eastwards, we have our Undertales. Like, Chrono Trigger is one of the earliest examples of the diversity in sound you can do. And I said this earlier, the Super Nintendo was rampant with it, but Chrono Trigger, I think, is the pinnacle of RPG songwriting. And I know some Final Fantasy VI fans will probably come for me for that, but that's fine. That rivalry is never ending, I think. But, like, I just think Chrono Trigger is something really special. And it's on Steam now. It was the mobile port, but they've improved it. They've really fixed it up. And so it's actually a very playable, very good version of the game. If you've to this day not played Chrono Trigger, it's on Steam. Absolutely play it. I mean, the ideal version would be a re-release by Square on the Switch would be the most ideal way to play that. But or Pixel Remaster, 2D HD, like any of those versions, I'll take. But it's really a magical game and an experience that is absolutely fueled by its music. And like its most memorable, most emotionally impactful moments are just enhanced by its soundtrack. It's the soundtrack's on Spotify. If you've never heard it, it's the DS version, which is the enhanced version that was originally on the PlayStation. I highly recommend giving it a listen. It's just some of the best Final Fantasy era, early Super Nintendo era writing that wasn't even a Final Fantasy game, but was a lot of the same people.
I'm so sad that like Chrono Trigger is like one of those blind spots that I have where it's just, you know the name, but I don't know anything about it. And I'm kind of sad that I don't right now. Like I've said all this whole entire night, like you've sold me on so many things right now, but I'm sad that I actually don't know it because I feel like I'm not giving it the appreciation that it deserves for what you're saying. Like for how you're describing it, it feels extremely underrated because I don't feel like, I mean, I don't know almost anything about Chrono Trigger. So I feel sad. That makes me sad that I'm missing out on something that is apparently so wonderful. So thank you for enlightening me.
Happy to.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as well. I'm very aware of it. It, you know, it's a part of gaming history. I love to go back and play games that I missed and kind of see its place in the gaming zeitgeist now. And I would love to play it. Maybe that'll be a Steam Deck game over the holidays. Ooh. I say that as I have a mini thing to try to catch up on, but I really do want to play it at some point.
I've played it on the Steam Deck. I haven't done a full playthrough because there's too many games, as we keep saying. But I did. It was literally the first thing I downloaded on my Steam Deck because they had updated it from the shitty mobile port, just like the shitty Final Fantasy mobile ports. And like they had patched it, and like it plays more like the DS edition, and it runs really well on Switch on the Steam Deck, and it sounds great on the Steam Deck. So like, nice. If you're looking for a place to play it, it's not the best version, but it's the best version that's accessible.
I've heard good things about the DS version.
The DS version is the best.
A DS version? Okay.
I don't know how much they go for, but the DS version is the best version of the game that's ever been released, and the one I will often go back to on my 3DS.
Okay. Good to know. Okay. So I think when I do get to it, I will try to locate a DS copy and play that one. Awesome. All right. I think now we've talked about our favorite games throughout our lives, and now let's close out this segment by discussing our favorite game from this year in terms of video game music. I can kick things off with my pick. Cult of the Lamb for me this year by Riverboy really stuck out. I think it was just such a fun mix of genres and moods and everything from chill lo-fi beats to like more intense acoustic guitar music that just really enhanced that game experience for me, and it was one of my favorite games of the year, indie or AAA aside. I just thought the gameplay loop was so fun, and the music just really, really enhanced the whole experience for me.
Right on,
that's awesome,
Claire. How about for you?
So I think mine was also Cult of the Lamb, but you already said that. So I think that my runner-up would be the Return to Monkey Island soundtrack, which was just really like whimsical and fun and swashbuckly, and it just really brought you into the vibe of the game in a big way. So that would be my pick.
Very good. Matt, how about for you?
So this is a game I've already mentioned several times on this podcast and many times on others as well. I feel like I'm defending the Indian former, the one Jill Grote, because it's her favorite game ever, I think. But it's, of course, Tunic by Janice Kwan and Lifeformed. Tunic was such a magical experience for me a few months back because I played it on the Steam Deck. I was lucky enough to have gotten a code from Finji when I had met their CEO at PAX East, and then never got around to playing it. She gave me a copy. We chatted for a while. I ended up getting to interview her at PAX West, which was great. You can hear that over on our Fun and Games coverage. She was wonderful. Rebecca is awesome. Bex, as she goes by. But I was like, you know, a couple months ago, I was like, you know what? I should play Tunic. I love Zelda. I've heard good things. I played it when it came to Game Pass, like, for, like, a couple hours and really dug it. It's time I go back to it. And if anyone knows me, I prefer my games on handhelds to anything else. And I just became obsessed with this game. I fell in love with it. And the soundtrack is absolutely a huge part of why. It's equal parts whimsy and ambiance. And even, like, towards the later parts of the game, there's some unnerving, haunting moments. It really takes the best of modern gaming soundtracks and old school, like, 16-bit, and kind of melds it together. And the synths are just incredible. I put it on all the time when I don't know what to listen to in the morning. Like, sometimes I'll listen to some pop music, but often if I just want to vibe to something, I will just put this on in my kitchen while I'm making coffee, because it's just such beautifully sweeping music that really kind of pulls me back into this game, but also stands up so well on its own.
Yeah, that's a great pick. That, if I hadn't put Cult of the Lamb, it would have been Tunic for me. Wonderful. Travis, how about for you?
So, like I mentioned before, I haven't played too many games this year that released all this good. Year. But I will say, I love Into the Breach. I mentioned it earlier very briefly, but I love Into the Breach so much. And this year they released a free DLC pack that had a bunch of new things that you can add to it. And included in that was a bunch of new tracks for when you're playing this game. And there's something about the soundtrack to Into the Breach that just, it's perfectly, like, just under the radar, in that it is the perfect background music for figuring out your little strategy for how you're going to complete this game. And it's, I don't know, I hear those tunes, and it's very tunnel vision. That game is, I get hyper-focused, and I am just in it, and I ingest that right into my ears, that music. And it just, those new tracks are great. I wish I had played more games to be able to give a better list, but I'm actually very happy with the idea that Into the Breach is the one I'm mentioning right now, because I do think it should be called out for the fact that it is very, 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 very good. So,
also, another great sales pitch, because I've yet to play Into the Breach, much to my dismay, and so I'll just add that to the list.
I love Into the Breach so much.
Same for me. We're all going to go download a lot of games after this podcast and look forward to it. Amazing. Well, I think we highlighted some really special games. My thought was, when I put up this episode, I'm going to make a Spotify playlist of a lot of these, and try to, listeners, you can jump into the playlist and put it on shuffle and just go on this journey with us, I think. Claire, shall we head into our closing segment, Questions with Claire?
Let's do it. So this week's question, name a musician, a band, or a composer that you would like to see contribute to a video game score who hasn't worked in games before.
This Good is luck. Hard.
Yeah. my first, like, 10 were, they've all done stuff.
Yeah, so. I know. I had a really hard time finding someone, but then I thought for a second, okay, it's a technicality, sure. Okay, Trent Reznor did the soundtrack for Quake with Nine Inch Nails. Great. Sure. Which is great. But I want Trent Reznor with Atticus Ross doing something. I love that HBO Watchmen soundtrack. That show has such an amazing original soundtrack. And the sound that those two people put together is just so good. I would love to see something with both of them kind of going together and working on something collaboratively on a video game. I know that, like, it might have been last year, they both produced a new album for Halsey, and I loved that album.
Oh,
and
that album is so good. Oh,
yeah,
man.
And they were both producers on it. I'm like, I like this sound, and this is why I like this sound, is because it's them. And I'm like, I was putting the links together in my head as to why I liked it so much. But, like, there's something about the music that they produce together. And, like, Nine Inch Nails is great, but it's just the stuff that they've collaboratively done together is really, really good. So I'm going to say Trent Reznor with Atticus Ross. And even though Trent Reznor did Quake, I'm giving myself a pass here because this was kind of difficult. So,
for sure. Love it. Right on. How about for you, Matt?
So for me, I think I hadn't really had an answer, but because they've been a recent re-obsession, even though I've been fans of this band for ages, I think, and they've done some other stuff outside of their music recently, that I think it would be really interesting to hear what kind of video game soundtrack they composed. But I think Tegan and Sarah would make really great.
Oh my gosh.
So
yes.
Tegan and Sarah, yeah, of course, with A Lonely Island, did Everything Is Awesome for the Lego Movie. They, of course, have had many albums and many singles. I got to see them in concert very recently, and their new album, Crybaby, I've been obsessed with. It's very good. Another recommendation, if you're a fan of Tegan and Sarah at any point, Crybaby, their newest record, is really good, really interesting. But they also put out a TV series based on the book they wrote about their life called High School. And I've started watching the TV show, and it's great. It's about how they were growing up as kids, how they kind of reconnected because of music and their childhood life that led to their career. And I just think, like, a Life is Strange style game with Tegan and Sarah would be really great. I am so sad that at the end of last year, I didn't play True Colors until after I'd done my Game of the Year list, because True Colors shot up my list after I had posted it.
It's phenomenal.
I love the original Life is Strange. I never played the sequel. I loved the original, and I didn't get to play Before the Storm, but I loved the first one so much. And when True Colors was getting so much praise, I was like, you know what, let me give it a try. It ended up becoming one of my favorite games of last year, along with Guardians of the Galaxy. Both underdog hits that I had no idea were going to be so huge. Mm-hmm. But that one also had a great soundtrack, but mostly because it was all 80s pop tunes.
For sure.
Which just is cheating. but yeah, I think Tegan and Sarah doing some kind of like visual novel or narrative game like A Life is Strange would be really great, because their songs have covered a whole range of emotion styles and talents, and I think they do a really great job supporting some kind of game like that.
Mm. Yeah, that would be awesome.
That's such a good pick. I wish I had picked it. Like, literally, that's such a good pick. I love it so much.
Yeah, that's really good. When I thought about this question, I was thinking, I am very big into jazz music.
Oh, yeah.
And I was thinking of, having played OFK, We Are OFK recently, I was thinking of a jazz musician-centric version of OFK with musicians like Joshua Redman or Grace Kelly.
Kelly would be excellent.
That would be really cool.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of the brass band Lucky Chops. Like, something along those lines, with that style of music, with a narrative focus, very cool art style that's unique to the genre of music and kind of represents that tone, I think would be really cool.
That's awesome.
I would definitely listen. <That's very cool. laughs> 100%.
I kind of went like opposite direction. I was thinking of more like in that classical music vein.
Ooh.
So I thought that it would be pretty cool to have a game that was scored by John Adams.
I like that.
Yeah.
I've played a couple of his orchestral works, and just like especially the minimalism. In that sort of style in a video game, maybe like a platformer with a lot of repetition or something, for example, would be like really cool. How, you know, a piece of music like subtly changes one note at a time with a lot of repetition just could be, that could be really cool.
Yeah, I love that. That's awesome.
No, I love that too. Can we make this happen?
Yeah.
Who do we have to contact?
At PAX
one of
East,
you,
we'll,
excuse
we'll make
me, Mr. Video
we'll
Games.
Go around. Yeah. Yes, yes.
One
Mr.
of you
video
must
games.
Have contacts somewhere.
I love that. That's amazing. Well, I think we've come to the close of the show. This was a really wonderful discussion. And yeah. Travis and Matt, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your insights and your passions. And it was really fun.
Thank you so much for having me. Oh, this was wonderful.
So we need to let the listeners know where they can find you both and all of your wonderful content that you do. Travis, do you want to kick us off?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm on Twitter for however long it lasts, at Travis Colnett. But I'm also one third of the podcast Cutscenes, a video game movie podcast. We review and watch old, or not necessarily old, all the video game movie adaptations, TV shows adaptations, all that kind of stuff. Some of them are fine. And so we kind of just watch them and we enjoy them. We talk about them. We're mostly positive. We have a good time with them. It's myself and two people who have been on this show before, Jacob McCourt and Katie Lesperance. We can follow us at cutscenes_pod on Twitter and on Instagram, or cutscenes.ca is our website. We are going to be coming back with a Game Awards episode because we can't resist a Game Awards episode. And I've been allowed to tease the fact that there is a really big show coming out in January, and we have something we'd like to possibly do with that, but I'm not going to say anything else.
But yes. A good mystery. Or not a mystery, depending on how you interpret the tease.
Or a mystery or not a mystery. But yes, yeah. So
either way, very excited either
yes,
way.
Yes, very exciting stuff. Hopefully coming up now that I'm a little bit more free. So
amazing.
Yeah.
If you're looking for a good starter episode, I was a guest on the Detective Pikachu episode.
Yes, you were.
Also.
Fantastic.
Jacob hired me to do the VO for the video games of, cutscenes of video game movie podcast.
It's the voice.
It's a great intro. You're the voice of cutscenes.
It's the voice of cutscenes. Here in the flesh.
It's still like every so often someone will be like, oh my God, I didn't know you did that for cutscenes. It's great. Like, it's very sweet. I mean, I've done some VO, but not a ton. And so when Jacob hired me to do it, I was like, yeah, sure. Absolutely. And it was a blast. But yeah, and so you should go listen to the Detective Pikachu episode because it's great, and I was on
it. Do it.
For me, you can find me, again, like Travis said, on Twitter as long as it's still around, because I'm going down with the ship because it's where I have the most followers. and I'm DJ_Stormageddon there, as well as on Twitch, TikTok, and Instagram, all DJ_Stormageddon. If you want to check out all of my work, it is literally too much to list right now. Even Luke had trouble earlier on. Factually too much stuff to list. But you can go to djstormageddon.com.
But it's also good. So that, you know, it's a good problem to have.
No underscore in that. Just djstormageddon.com. And it has all the shows that I host, all the shows that I edit, all the shows I produce. There's too many of them. If I had to direct you to one place, of course, it would be Fun and Games, which I host with the incredible Jeff Moonen, who I will pitch as a guest for a future episode because he's a great guest.
Absolutely.
But it's our love letter to video games. It's also where you can find Side Quests, which Luke has done an episode for. I need to get Claire to do an episode. Travis has done two episodes or
I've
one?
I've done one.
You've done one. I want to get you a second one.
I have hopes for a second one, and I have to check your list out. So
yeah, Katie's done like three at this point. So I know, right? Blown you and Jacob away. I think I've done a second one as well.
And it's coming.
It's coming soon. Yep.
Love it.
And it's on a game that you've mentioned many times tonight. So yeah, a little cheese there. Which one?
I love it.
But yeah, and of course, I'm the current freelance editor for the Game Informer show hosted by the incredible Alex Van Aken. So if you're looking for some cool stuff in the mainstream games journalism space, I help make that happen every week. But yeah, and if you want to, rate and review all of my podcasts, please do, because, and rate and review cutscenes, rate and review this one, because we're all out here fighting for that indie space, and it helps all of us. Rising tide raises all ships.
It really does. For sure. Well, that's amazing. Thank you both for being here. And listeners, please go check out both Matt and Travis. They're doing amazing things, positive things. Always bring a smile to my face when I listen to your content. So thank you so much for being here. Claire, as always, thank you for co-hosting this wonderful podcast. Couldn't do it without you.
It was so much fun.
Good vibes. All right. Well, listeners, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. Some quick housekeeping items. Please subscribe to our show on your podcast platform of choice. We are now officially on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and more. If you enjoy our podcast, consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/lukewarmgames for exclusive podcasts and more. You can go ahead and follow @lukewarmgames on Twitter to get the latest updates on our show for now. And with that, have a fantastic week. Cheers and happy gaming.